of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
The following is a special presentation of Alpha Media. Welcome to Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. Now, here's your host, Brett Recap.
Good day. Thank you very much. And welcome in to the 507th edition of Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of the stories making news here in the Pacific Northwest and beyond as we move through this month of March 2024. On all seven of our Alpha Media Portland radio stations, including FM News 101. We start with a really cool story I actually collected at the Portland Golf Show last weekend. I took my son Keenan with me, and we stumbled upon a booth with a banner that read, ID Golf, ID Golf, with an apostrophe. Turns out they are a Northwest golf apparel company with some pretty cool ideas. So I stopped and talked with the guys. Nick Fry is one of the co-founders of ID Golf. I encourage you to go to idgolf.com right now. Check out their purely Northwest-themed shirts and hats and whatnot. I will say that I bought a shirt for Keenan with a cool Sasquatch carrying golf clubs all over it. He loves it. It's awesome. So here's how things sounded with Nick from ID Golf from the Portland Golf Show this last weekend.
Yeah, so my name is Nick Fry, and our company is ID Golf. That's ID Golf. We started in Boise, Idaho about 5 years ago. Kind of strictly started with Idaho stuff. And funny thing is, like, we all have family across the Pacific Northwest, here in the Portland area, all over Washington. And when COVID hit in 2020 and we kind of had to slow down our wholesale orders to golf courses around the area and stuff like that, we decided, all right, let's branch out, make some Oregon and Washington stuff. And we did, and became a hit. And then we came out with our Bigfoot, as you can kind of see here, and that just took off. So we, every year now, hit about four golf shows in the Pacific Northwest and keep coming back.
It's a pretty competitive marketplace, I would imagine. Are you mostly apparel?
Definitely competitive. I mean, if you get on social media and you kind of start following some golf-themed accounts, you'll definitely see a repetitive theme. We're mostly apparel. When we first started, we kind of did golf course reviews as well. What they have in the clubhouse, food-wise, alcohol-wise, you know, TVs, sports like that going on. So we did that too, but mainly hats, polos. We do some sweatshirts, some quarter zip fleece, and then we also have a few accessories. You know, we give away stickers, patches, koozies, that type of thing. But mainly hats and polos. That's kind of our bread and butter.
Awesome. So how do you try to stay different? The Sasquatch thing is cool. Some of your graphics are pretty neat. So how do you try to pop a little bit? I like the regional part of it, but in terms of what actually shows up on these shirts and kind of your stuff?
Yeah, so good question. Talking about the shirts, we kind of have some subtle Pacific Northwest themes within our design. So one of the shirts you see here actually has the Oregon State tree on it, kind of hidden in it. It has the Washington and Idaho State tree. So it's we try to play off a local feel. So we know, like, every market that we go to, we're not the locals, but what do the locals like and what do the locals value? And we try to play that local feel, what draws people, what they're proud of from their state, stuff like that. So there's always some sort of subtle Pacific Northwest theme in our design.
Cool. So what do you guys' background? Is it graphic design? Did you have a previous life, if you will, and said, you know what, we love golf, we want to make cool stuff, and let's go for it?
Yeah, so there's four buddies that started the business, kind of all born and raised in different parts of Idaho. That's how it started. We were like, oh, let's come out with like an Idaho Golf brand, just because we were bored talking over beers one day. And my background is actually in sales analytics, so a little bit more of the analytical side. Two of my buddies, one of you guys see here, more sales. And then the third buddy, he's kind of a mix of everything. But
it's like a good mesh kind of thing, different skill sets.
Definitely. That's what makes it kind of work. I'm able to communicate ideas that I have in my head to a graphic designer, and that's actually some of the designs you see here.
Nice.
And then my business partner, Zach, here, he probably drew up half of these designs. So it's a little bit of mix between his creativeness and then us hiring a friend, actually, that was in college wanting to add to her portfolio. So
super cool. And how do you, how does one get these products to the shelves, you know, when it comes to picking materials and all that kind of manufacturing?
Great question. Live and learn. The bowls that you see here in front of you actually are new, and it was trial and error. We actually started with a different manufacturer, and it did not turn out well. And luckily, we were able to kind of find a guy that wanted to buy it and give it to his employees for golf shows. But really, it was trial and error. When we first started, we used to buy a whole bunch of stuff in blank, like wholesale blank bulk orders, and then like screen print or do our own design kind of just on like the small like upper left chest.
Yeah.
And then we wanted to get a little bit more creative, and I just kind of started Googling stuff, emailing companies, and then we settled on one. So we bring in, our polos come in from overseas. Everything else is
domestic,
embroidered, local, made in the United States outside of these four polos you see.
Yeah, excellent. Well, so what, 4 or 5 years? Oh, so congratulations on getting it this far. I mean, best of luck. What's your breaking point? I mean, how do you have to make it through a little bit, and then you're like, hey, we're in good shape.
Yeah, great question. So currently the four of us all have full-time jobs that kind of, pay for health insurance, that type of thing, support the family. My goal is the next 5 years, would love to do this full-time. We're actually trying to bring on an investor, hopefully by the end of the year or some point next year, just because we're in a point where we can expand, but we just need a little bit of help. And so if that happens, that is kind of maybe, quote, the breaking point, right? If we're able to take somebody on that can take us to the next level, great. Yeah. And if not, we'll kind of just keep grinding and see what happens.
Nice. I mean, I think of brands like Good Good, for instance. It's pretty new, but kind of flashy, and it has seemed to break out to the point where they're in retail stores now and that type of thing.
Yeah, and the cool thing about golf and maybe the last 5 years, but definitely since COVID, it brought a whole new demographic in, right? So it's kind of the only thing you could do to get outside. And a lot of younger crowd gets into it. So if you look around, there's a lot of fun new golf companies out. So like, as you mentioned earlier, competition is maybe fierce, but you got to find your own little niche. And we kind of, like I said, play off the state local feel. Yeah, we sell to some retailers around the state here in Oregon, Washington, Idaho. And just, like I said, kind of keep grinding and persevering.
Congratulations. Thanks for talking with me, Nick. Anything else you want to say?
No, if you got time, check out our website. It's just idgolf.com. Hopefully we got something for everybody. But if we don't yet, we will in the future. So appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Beautiful. Happy to go to idgolf.com and check out more of their gear. Big thanks to Nick Fry and his partner, Zach, for taking time with me from the Portland Golf Show. I did a web story as well about them on KXL.com. You can check that out. Once again, that's IDGolf, IDGolf, but it's just IDGolf.com on the web. Best of luck, guys. Shifting gears just a little bit. If you're looking for a hero, here's one for you. The legacy of a man whose love for soccer was only smaller than his smile will be remembered at a Southwest Portland park where he served his community. KXL's Jim Ferretti brings us this week's KXL Everyday Hero. It is the late Josh Brown, a soccer star from the time he was 5 years old. He played at Jesuit and the University of Portland, as well as New Mexico, was even drafted by the Portland Timbers. Josh was an amazing athlete, but also outstanding with young people. Josh's life was cut tragically short on Christmas Day last year when he was killed in a car crash on Southwest Taylor's Ferry Road. Here is part of Josh's story as told by Jesse Franco, a parent whose kids Josh took to right away.
Josh Brown is one, a teacher, a coach, and then obviously a beloved husband and friend in the Bridal Mile community in Southwest Portland. He attended Bridal Mile Elementary. Not sure where he went to middle school, but he was a star in basketball and then obviously soccer at Jesuit, and then went on to play at, I think it was University of Portland, and then he transferred to New Mexico, and, you know, he won, was a recipient of a bunch of accolades, and then he was drafted by the Timbers.
And I understand that he turned all of that into coaching of children, correct?
Yes, big time. He's also, how I met him was he taught my kids, my daughter's 11 and my son's 7, but he was their preschool teacher at Vermont Hills. And so that's how I met him. I didn't even know his soccer affiliation, and, you know, he's very humble, or he was very humble, and really didn't talk about that. And I kind of just researched him because I heard he played soccer, and then I found out how amazing he was at soccer, and he was part of the United, you know, like United is who my daughter plays for, is a big soccer, I don't know, group, or I don't know, they just have different leagues, and so he was part of that club for a long time, and just always helped children and learn about the sport. He was just extremely enthusiastic about it, and during COVID, he over by our house where I'm putting this bench at in Hamilton Park, just did trainings with the kids just because he wanted them outside. You know, kids were having a tough time with COVID. And so he would go down there and just, you know, teach them skills. And but he was just a huge proponent of getting kids outside and helping them, you know, learn the game of soccer while having as much fun as possible.
That's great to hear. Can you, you said the word was, can you kind of mention to me and talk to me about what happened to Josh?
He passed away in a car accident last year on Christmas, December, you know, 25th of 2023.
What kind of impact did that have on his community?
I would say a very major impact. It was a big loss, you know, not only for the kids that I know, but his web extended very far, which I don't even know the extent of it, but just going to his memorial service or a celebration of life at Jesuit, the whole gym was packed, and they showed his soccer highlights of, it was from the ESPN game where he played in the semifinals. I think it was against Clemson or something. I'd have to look it up, but yes, it was just amazing. And the people that spoke at it, you know, there was former, coaches that had coached him from almost every level. And I mean, to fill up a gym, I mean, that's pretty amazing.
He sounds like he was an amazing person. You decided to carry on his legacy by making sure he has a permanent spot in Hamilton Park. What are you doing?
Yeah. So, I don't know. He meant a lot to our family, and, I just wanted to, I don't know, somehow create something or something that would, you know, carry on his legacy. And, you know, I'd always see those benches and there's, you know, plaques all around, just anywhere, and kind of thought about that. And I was like, you know, curious to find out how we could do something like that. So I just kind of just Googled benches, memorial benches, and then boom, right away, there was a Legacy Bench Foundation that popped up for Portland Park. And so I reached out to them, and, you know, they gave me the cost. And I reached out to a lot of his friends and, you know, people that I knew. And so I started the GoFundMe page and, you know, took a, you know, couple of weeks or a month or so, and we came up with the over $5,000 in donations to do this. And I just got confirmation today. I've been going back and forth with them because their application deadline had closed, and, you know, I didn't have the money to pay for it right off, and I didn't know if I, you know, would pay for it, if I could recoup my expenses or whatever. But the deadline had expired, but I had been in communication with her at Portland Park, and just got it literally like an hour and a half ago to send in the money, and all systems are a go. So we're extremely excited, and we're going to do a little ceremony with his wife. And so he had a wife and two big dogs that he loved so much. So once we get this plaque, I'm going to figure out the right wording for the plaque here in the next, week or so, and send in all that information, and hopefully the process continues really rapidly, and we could do this this bench dedication to his wife and friends and whoever shows up, family, for hopefully sooner than later.
That's great to hear. That's great to hear. Anything else you want to tell me about Josh or this process?
No, it was just I'm really excited and just happy that it came to fruition. It was difficult to tell, as hard it was to, tell my 7-year-old, I didn't know really how to break it to him, but how much, he really loves him. My daughter, who's 11, and she plays for United Premier League, and just, all the kids that he touched. And this bench is actually, the bench is already in the park, but now it's going to be dedicated to him. But he used to always put his stereo on there and, be listening to Bob Marley and just playing great music, and would always have treats for the kids, ice cream and candy. And he was a big treat guy. And just seeing, his infectious smile, and he's just a great man. So.
Well, Jesse, you and the community did a great thing, and I appreciate you telling me all about it.
Well, appreciate your time. I didn't know where this kind of came from. Kind of came out of the blue. So.
Yeah, we're just
making
searches.
Me stir up a little bit.
And there is Jesse Franco with KXL's Jim Ferretti talking about Josh Brown, a superstar athlete and greatly missed member of the community. You can view the new memorial bench in honor of Josh Brown at Hamilton Park. You are listening to the 507th edition of Beyond the Headlines. I'm your host, Brett Recamp. Okay, there are some cities around the country that will actually pay you to move there, and they're going after remote workers here. This is not a new thing totally. States with dwindling populations have been coming up with ways to keep their young people. And when that has not worked, they're recruiting families from other places. Kobe Hall is from Saving Our Appalachian Region. He says Owensboro, Kentucky is one city recruiting remote workers by offering them cash to move. Other states doing this include West Virginia, Alaska, and New York. So here is my morning partner, KXL's Veronica Carter, talking with Colby Hall from Saving Our Appalachian Region.
We're a nonprofit that was formed about 10 years ago, Veronica, when the coal industry had its final collapse. I mean, there's still some activity, but, people kind of in the region, this has been for the eastern part of the state, a little east, more east from Williamsburg. I think Williamsburg's probably the fringe of eastern Kentucky. Coal is part of the legacy. I mean, that was the number one job creating industry for over 100 years, right? So, slowly over time, employment and production started to decline. And then around the recession, there were some things that hit that the industry, just was no longer there. I mean, in any sort of capacity. So there's kind of this big question of, what comes next, right? What do we do? And so our organization was kind of formed to try to help answer that question, from a diversification standpoint, or how do we rebuild ourselves following this huge loss to our region? And so, fast forward to the intersection with this, what we see as our number one mission or goal or priority, Veronica, is to grow population in our part of the state. Not to flood you with a bunch of data, but if you look, our region has hemorrhaged people leaving for decades. And if you look at projections, looking ahead, if nothing changes, right, if the status quo, stays in place, they're projecting huge numbers of people continuing to leave. And, at the simplest level, people need to understand, there's no such thing as place without people. You've got to have people. I mean, that's what makes a community. That's who buys things from one another, that's who pays taxes. I mean, that's who keeps utilities going, right? I mean, you got to have people.
Right.
So what we know is what you read in the Outdoor magazine is that we live in one of the most beautiful places in the world. Safe, it's smaller community feel, more affordable cost of living. you know, it has appeal to people from, I mean, obviously larger metropolitan areas, but from any place, right? I mean, we have all four seasons. We have Mount. I mean, it's a paradise in a lot of ways. And so our remote worker attraction program, Veronica, was really trying to take advantage of this emerging trend, really after the pandemic, where we saw people moving their migratory paths changing because of some of those impacts that COVID had on the workforce and the economy, right? Where more people were less bound to a specific area for work, right?
Right.
And so we kicked this around for a little bit, trying to, you know, figure out how to fund it and how to get it off the ground. So that's still a big question, but I was able to figure it out enough to get something off the ground. So what you see is a minimally viable product is we got it started in the middle of last year, and we're trying to get 10 households to move by the end of this year. Just trying to do economic development, community development in a way that plays to our strengths, which is we don't have to worry about creating jobs, which has historically been a little bit of a challenge in our area. Since you already have a job, why don't we just try to help get you here? Because you're looking to move to a place like this, so we want you here. So what can we do to help you come?
Right.
And that's kind of our pitch. And, you know, it's been successful. I mean, truly, I think had almost 2,000 total applications to our program. Now, those get whittled down because we have to do certain things. You know, we have to, you know, look at, you know, background checks. We have to verify income. There's certain parts of our program, certain people that we're trying to pull, like we're looking for healthcare workers because we have so many open healthcare jobs, or teachers. We need more young people, so looking for households with children. There's certain ways that we evaluate applications for our limited spots that, you know, is really going to try to benefit the region the most. But, you know, almost 2,000 total applications, that's turned into, you know, really probably about, you know, between 200 and 300, like, real legitimate folks that, like, we would really love to have. And then from there, you know, engaging with them, trying to figure out what we can do to get them, you know, them looking for housing and all that. And so I think so far between the middle of last year and now, I think we've had like 6 actual people move, oh, households. And that's resulted in, I think, about 15 total people, right? Because when there's a trailing spouse or there's some kids, right, it's been about maybe a little over 1.5 people per household that's moved. So, and those are people with, you know, significantly higher household incomes than what we have in our region too. So these are people that spend money that can generate more returns for the local economy, that can actually create jobs because of the demand that they're bringing and things like that. So we're up front with people, and I'll shut up after this, that, you know, this isn't, we don't think this is going to solve all of our issues, right? But, like, this is a lever we can pull and something that we can be competitive with. And in a lot of ways, right, like, we can pitch something that a place like Portland can't, to be quite honest, because we're two different types of places. And so why not leverage this and get from it what we can, while also exploring other diversification options or other forms of economic development. But, like, this is just something that we think pays for itself and is a good return on the region. So right. Hopefully that makes a bit.
It does. So you guys are specifically looking for remote workers for this campaign, right?
That's right. Yes, that's correct.
And it sounds like it was super successful. I mean, do you think you'll ramp it up? I mean, because, you know, 15 extra people is great, but that's kind of just a drop
for
in
sure.
the bucket.
Correct. Yeah, and that's the plan, right? We make sure, you know, this phase one, does it work? Are we going to get anybody to apply, right? You know, other places are saying there's a trend, and I think what we've seen with this is, yeah, it can. So let's pump some more resources into it and really try to pilot something out. And that's kind of where we are today. And so we're hoping, you know, later this year, we found some other ways to fund it at a higher level and really grow it, include more numbers of counties from our territory, reach more people, admit, welcome more people. And you're exactly right. That way we can actually, you know, start to move the needle in terms of populations.
So, and I've known other areas that have done this, and they've done it repeated years in a row because it did turn out well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, other places caught on. You know, we definitely didn't have first mover advantage, but, you know, better for better or worse. I mean, there's folks, a lot of folks have heard of Eastern Kentucky or Appalachia. They may have some preconceived notions, but, you know, people do know something usually when they hear us, and if they do a little bit more research and they look into what we have to offer, you know, it's probably not for everybody, but for somebody that's looking for a beautiful place to live that is, quaint and smaller and all those benefits that we have. You know, I think we're as competitive as any other place across the country that has a program like this.
And you mentioned, you know, the preconceived notions. I mean, I've lived in states before that, you know, got a lot of flack. You know, I lived in Indiana for a long time. And, you know, it's like, oh, corn, that's all you have, you know. And I've heard the jokes about Kentucky. So how do you how do you combat that?
Well, one person at a time. And quite honestly, Veronica, you don't pay too much attention to it because, you know, if people actually take the time and come and see, they'll see that our problems and challenges that we have are no different than any other place across the country. And nobody's immune. Nobody lives in a there's no such thing as a perfect oasis, right? Every city, every county, every urban, every rural area has its own mix of issues. You know, our area has probably been a little more targeted or treated a little bit more unfavorably with some hurtful stereotypes that have been exploited for commercial interests in a lot of ways that maybe have made that a little bit worse in our case. But I think if people came to any part of Kentucky, but especially Eastern Kentucky, and spent any time, they would leave impressed and thinking, you know, what I heard, that's not what it's really like to be here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And just answer every inquiry like that with, hey, rent's cheaper here too.
Well, there's a lot of things, but you know, when people would say that, you try not to turn it into, then you're talking bad about other places. It's just, every place has its problems. They deal with them in different ways. None of the stuff that we have here is unique to us. I mean, a lot of people talk about, you know, we have had issues with like the opioid, you know, epidemic, but so has a lot of other places in the country too, right? It just, you know, we were they picked our area in Appalachia for different reasons, but that spread everywhere. So, I mean, it's, you know, nothing's like endemic to our area. It's just, it's stuck, but, definitely cheaper rent.
The governor of Oregon has declared a 90-day fentanyl emergency right here. So, you know, we have no room to talk about that.
Well, I'm aware of some of that. And I was actually in Portland a couple weeks ago. It's funny. That's why you reached out for something else. That was my first time I'd visited. But, you know, so that's why. But I'm not here to talk bad about any other place. We just all have our own sets of issues that we're all trying to do our best to take care of. And every place has good stuff going on in it, too. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So
when someone asks you what's great about your area, you know, give me the pitch. Tell me what it is that's great.
Well, I would say that's a good one. I would start by saying it's not for everybody, right? Nor would we ever say that Veronica, that Eastern Kentucky is a perfect place for everybody. If you're looking for a place that there's never a dull moment, whether you're going to the grocery store or to the bank, I mean, the characters and the personalities that you run across in Eastern Kentucky, every day's full of adventure, every day's full of life. I mean, it's just such a unique culture, right? It's a warm culture. It's a hospitable culture. And people are smart in different ways than you've probably ever experienced. They're really funny. They're really sharp. But they're also extremely loyal, right? So when I think about living in a community where I want to raise a family and where I want to be, you know, that idea that you have your neighbors looking out for you, that you have, it takes a village, that's still really true in this part of the country. And I think that's maybe diverges a little bit from what else is going on across in terms of, you know, it feels like I read stuff that talks about how we're more isolated than ever before. You know what I mean? For better or for worse, we're also in a part of the country where connectivity has had gaps too. So maybe that's what's allowed us to resist some of that isolation. But I still think that, like, we're in a part of the country where people really take care of each other and they care about one another. And on top of all the things I could tell you, being beautiful and low cost of living and good schools and safe and all that stuff is really important too. To me, like, if I had to pick one specific place that is a differentiating factor, but it's probably hard until you visit, it's that people take the time to stop, ask questions, especially if you're not from there. If you're from Portland, they're really interested in who you are, what your story is. They'd invite you to their house for Thanksgiving after just meeting you. And that type of hospitality, I just don't think you can find that everywhere. And I think that's unique to our part of the country and our part of the state.
And that is Colby Hall from Saving Our Appalachian Region talking with Veronica. You have been listening to Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of this week's stories. You can follow me on Twitter, X now. It's at Brett Recamp. And if you missed anything, the podcast is up at KXL.com. You can download the show on iTunes or Google Play. Just look for Beyond the Headlines KXL. We now have 507 shows to choose from. For Alpha Media USA in downtown Portland, I'm Brett Recamp on FM News 101.
This has been Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. This has been a special presentation of Alpha Media.